Thank you very much for coming. Yesterday we discussed some of the early history of ISKCON Press, which later became the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. That's only a partial history that I gave yesterday. There's more. But in answer to a question, today we're going to come to discuss revisions made to Srila Prabhupada's books. Pretty much everything I'm going to say is available to you on the web at this website, bbtedit.com. You can write it down or key it into your cell phone. And you'll find a lot more. In fact, there's videos, there's original manuscripts. There's a lot there. Yeah, there's room for you. You can come in. We've kept some space for you. Come on. You can be, in fact, right up front. One thing is that we would encourage you to get your books from the BBT. Let's see what I've got here.
I need...
We would encourage you to purchase books only from the BBT. Due to a court case some years ago, the BBT was more or less obliged to give a license to a group of devotees, allowing them to publish older editions of Srila Prabhupada's books. The court case was essentially about a claim by a former trustee, Hamsadutta Das, to be still a trustee, and in fact the only trustee of the BBT, although he'd been involved in unhappy activities, and that's a long story I don't want to go into. Anyway, he made that claim, and the judge indicated that by strictly going by the documents, he could have that claim. So the BBT, rather than take the court case further, settled the matter out of court by giving a license to this group called KBI, Krishna Books, Inc. But we would like you to know about an instruction Srila Prabhupada gave in March 14th, 1994, in a memorandum to all ISKCON centers. My dear disciples, please accept my blessings. Now that our ISKCON is growing into a huge worldwide organization, it has come to my attention that sometimes centers are printing my literature, taking collection, and spending, all outside the jurisdiction of the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. This must not go on. I specifically formed the BBT to invest in it exclusive rights for the printing of all literature containing my teachings, writings, and lectures. In this way, the collections are to be divided 50% for printing our books and 50% for construction of temples. The BBT can authorize a center to print, as in the case of foreign translations, with the agreement that when the foreign printing becomes financially solvent, they will pay royalties to the BBT. But all printing of ISKCON literature must be by the BBT or under their sanction and approval. If temples print independently, it will be at the cost of the books I myself... It will be at the cost of the books I am myself printing and could eventually cause the financial ruin of the BBT, meaning I could not order new books from the printer or have sufficient funds for construction of temple projects. I trust this is now clear and you will all do the needful. If you have any questions in this matter, you can write me directly or consult with the GBC representative. Pretty clear, wouldn't you say? Prabhupada wanted the BBT to be his exclusive publisher and wanted us to buy his books exclusively from the BBT. So if anyone is encouraging you to buy books, Prabhupada's books elsewhere, you can ask them how they offer you that encouragement and still consider themselves not to be disobeying the orders of the bona fide spiritual master. And if they give you an answer, bring it to me, because I'd be very interested to know how one reconciles directly disobeying the order of the spiritual master with the claim that one is not doing so. So, we encourage you to buy whichever edition of Prabhupada's books you prefer from the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. Okay. Clear? Any questions about that? Yes? Loud. Yeah, you can buy cheaper. Here's why you can buy cheaper. Srila Prabhupada said, print the book, mark it up 100%, and sell it to the temples. That means the book costs you twice as much as we paid the printer, or as we spent on printing the book. Now, you can go someplace else where they'll print the book, mark it up by zero or next to zero, and give it to you for half the price that you could get it from the BBT. It's very simple. Deprive Srila Prabhupada of the money that he's supposed to get for printing his books and sell it to the temples cheaper. That sounds nice, doesn't it? It's very easy. You can get it cheaper. All you have to do is cheat the author. So if you would like to cheat the author, go outside the BBT and buy books for your temples there. And again, tell me your explanation for how you're not disobeying the orders of the spiritual master. Is that very clear? No, it's not 1.5. It's 1.25, I believe. No, it's not. I'll explain. The cost of printing is not really the cost of what you pay the printer. The cost of printing is what you pay the printer, what it takes to put the books together, what it takes to run your entire publishing organization. If you just pay the printer, you're going to be in the hole. Right? Yeah, I just said printing price because I was being loose. But it's actually the cost of printing the book. What's the cost to print a book? What you pay the printer, or what you pay the printer plus your cost of putting the book together, proofreading it, typesetting it, you know, everything else that goes into publishing a book. Yes, he certainly would. Yeah. We're not. Oh, I'm sorry. 2.25. Yeah, 100%. We mark it up 125%. We mark up the printing cost. We mark up the printer's bill. Excuse me. I understand that, but he didn't say double the price of the book. What is the price of the book? What is the price of the book? Right, and that's what we do. I'm saying we take what we pay the printer, which is most of what it costs to print the book, and we mark that up 125%. That covers what we paid, that doubles the printer's cost, and it gives another 25% that covers all the other costs. Follow?
Not really.
I'll do it again. this is a book. This is 100% of the cost. This is 100% of the printing cost. These four fingers represent 100% of the printing cost. This fifth finger represents all the other costs, the cost of layout, the cost of design, the cost of your legal office, the cost of communicating with your printers, all the costs that go into printing, actually publishing the book. We take these four fingers and we multiply times 1.25. That covers these four fingers and the fifth finger. Is it clear? What should I do? Was it clear to most of you? Okay. Most people got it. Like, we can talk later. I'm at your service. The basic principle is that the cost of publishing a book is more than the cost of printing the book. And our rough estimate is that it's about 25% more. 20%, 25% more. And that's why when we could just do it this way. We say, okay, here's our total cost for publishing the book. But that's very hard to calculate because you're publishing all these different books and you have all these things. So as a rule of thumb, we've found that if you take the printer's bill and add 20% to that, the 20% pretty well covers the rest of your costs. Which are, okay, editing, design. You publish new books. You have proofreading. You have proofreading when you change formats. We publish e-books. Yes, we do. No, it's not. Yes, it is. Prabhupada had the BBT published Vedic readings in Vedic literature by Satsarup Maharaj, Krishna the Supreme Scientist by Swarup Damodar Maharaj, and he never told us it's only for publishing my books. So we publish new books. We publish Prabhupada's books in new editions, like we were discussing yesterday, e-books. The e-books aren't free. We're giving them to you free, but somebody has to sit there and physically proofread the books, transfer them into EPUB format, mess around with all the diacritics when you take it off the database and try and put it into XML. Excuse me? Right. It was all done as devotional service. You look at the BBT budget from the 1970s and see how much that devotional service cost. I ate in the 1970s and the BBT fed me. They didn't pay me a salary, but I wasn't free. Even though I was a free worker, they paid for me. Yeah, they paid something to eat. They paid something for that building on the corner of Watsake Avenue. The rent wasn't free. Okay. He did. And yet he had us pay Hayagriva a salary. It was unique. Why did Prabhupada have us pay Hayagriva? Because he wouldn't have done the work if we didn't pay him. Now, I still work for free. Dravida still works for free. Quite a number of our BBT, Brahma Muhurta works for free. In BBT Africa, all but two of my 20 people work for free. So we like free. Given a choice, we'll take free over paid any day of the week. But we won't take free and don't publish as our preferred mode of working. If we have to pay to get the work done, we pay. Prabhupada's first instruction was, get the book out. And a secondary instruction was, don't pay salaries. I'm totally against salaries. I hate them. I love, you know, out of my heart, I serve in pure devotional service. But I hate not turning out the books even more. Are the figures available? Yeah, if you write to me, we'll send you. I can put them. I'll put them together as best I can. I can certainly send. No, they're not standardly available. We don't have a spreadsheet that we've put together to send out to the world to tell you. But I can put it together. I'll get it together for you at the best of my ability. The other thing that, now that you mention it, I'm putting it on our June agenda, is that I'd like to have an annual report from the BBT globally, which would include that sort of information. I think that, you know, it's a reasonable request. You're entitled to know. The BBT is, you're a stakeholder in the BBT, as all the devotees are, and there's no reason for that information to be confidential or secret. It should be, you know, right up there on the table. I understand. Excuse me? Yeah. No, I'm not the head of the BBT. I'm one of the guys that work here. But it was already, I could show you my, you know, points for the June agenda. It's already on my thing. For BBT Africa, we do publish an annual report. And it's distributed to all the devotees in you know, the African area. So I'd like that to be, that's how we run it in Africa. And I think that's a good global standard. We do report to the GBC, which represents ISKCON's interests, but I don't think that's broad enough. I think that our figures should be publicly available for inspection. You'll see, by the way, that the BBT works at an amazingly cheap rate. If you take the Bhaktivedanta archives, for example, they're basically working below the poverty line. We, by preference and by force, we're not rich, keep our expenses as close to zero as we can make them. But your request is entirely reasonable, entirely justified, and it's on my agenda also. Is that okay? Thanks. Okay. Let's close this. So today I propose to talk about some of the more interesting, constructive, and instructive revisions to Bhagavad Gita as it is. Most of Prabhupada's other books have received very little revision. The small books have received none. Krishna book has received a very light revision. Teachings of Lord Chaitanya also, Ishopanishad also. Srimad Bhagavatam, the revisions are extremely slight. They're, you know, an error fixed here, an error fixed there. But there was a very large-scale revision of Bhagavad Gita as it is, and so I'm going to focus on that. Nothing in this seminar is meant to bash the first edition. It's an excellent book. It's available. The BBT publishes it. If that's the edition you prefer, that's fine with us. But unfortunately, the second edition, which we believe is still better, has come under considerable criticism, much of it uninformed and regrettably uncivil. So some clarification and explanation seems in order. Now, here's what we're going to do. First, I'm going to play for you an audio file. I mentioned it yesterday. It's the only audio file available for Bhagavad Gita as it is, of Srila Prabhupada's original dictation. And that's for the introduction. I'm not going to play the whole thing, but I'll play the very end of that file and then explain it. I'll give you some history of the editing. I'll tell you what was done. We'll examine some specific examples. And finally, I'll invite you to ask any questions you may wish to place to me. This audio file was recorded, apparently by Prabhupada himself, on February 19th, 1966. And the entire intro, the entire file is available from the Bhaktivedanta archives. Srila Prabhupada apparently wrote Bhagavad Gita as it is during 1966 and 1967. Macmillan published the first edition, the abridged edition, which we talked about yesterday, in 1968, and the first complete unabridged edition in 1972. In about 1980, at the request of various devotees and the BBT trustees, I undertook a revision of the text. What happened was that devotees were finding mistakes. What about this? What about this? What about this? So as they were building up, we thought rather than deal with them patchwork, let's deal with the whole text wholesale. So at the request of the trustees, I undertook that work. I wasn't a trustee back then. I consulted Gopi Pranadana Prabhu and our other Sanskrit editors. For the English, I consulted Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, Garuda Prabhu, and other devotees. In 1982, the GBC discussed the work and approved it, contingent on approval by a panel that it appointed to review the final revisions to the translations. The panel included Satsrup Maharaj, Harisari Prabhu, and other ISKCON leaders. They met for several days in Detroit and refined, approved, or disapproved various changes. And in 19... I believe Bhagavan was one of them. Harisari, Satsrup Maharaj. If you ask me after the class, I have it on my computer. I can review it. It was about five or seven people. In 1982, I sent a list of every proposed revision to the translations to virtually every ISKCON leader in the English-speaking world, which in the days before the internet was quite a project, and asked for comments. That letter is available on the BBT Edit website. In 1983, the BBT published the second edition, and in 1985, the GBC reaffirmed its endorsement of the second edition. Okay, let's do that audio file. What I'd like you to do, those of you who have books, follow right along. It's in. Come to the introduction, and you'll find toward the end a place where it says, in conclusion. Now, let me find that for you. In conclusion, Bhagavad Gita is a transcendental literature which one should read very carefully. Got it? And I'm going to show you on the screen what was printed in the first edition. That's what you see here. Everybody found their place? In conclusion, Bhagavad Gita is a transcendental literature. Neha bikramanashosti pratyavayanavidite. If you give me the book, I'll find it for you. Page 31? Okay. Page 31. You found it over there, right? Okay. Ready to go? Let's find our audio file and then flip back.
Conclusion is that, although
That's where the tape ran out. Okay. Some comments I'd like to make. First of all, this has been very well edited. Hayagriva Prabhu was an associate professor or assistant professor, I forget which, of English literature. And editing Prabhupada was hard. You know, his sentence starts going in one direction, then it moves in another direction, and various ungrammatical things happen. And Prabhupada repeats himself and so on. And to take that spoken word and turn it into a cogent English written text is hard work. And Hayagriva Prabhu did an expert job. It's his eternal credit. Now, there were some other features of the text that perhaps you noticed. One is probably the headline feature. Would somebody like to suggest what that was? Yeah? Sanskrit. Prabhupada is quoting here from a text called Gita Mahatmya, 8 verses, I believe, Gita Mahatmya. And he goes through them one after another. And as you've noticed, none of them are there. If you go from beginning to the end of the text, every one of those Sanskrit verses has been dropped. That's a conspicuous feature. Those who have the second edition, are those verses there? Every one of them? Okay. Every one of those verses that Prabhupada spoke is present in the second edition and absent in the first edition. There's some other features to notice. You probably noticed this verse in the beginning. Neha bikramana shosti pratyavayo nivijate. Swalpamapyasya dharmasya chayate mahato bhayat. In this endeavor, there is no loss or diminution, and a little advancement on this path can protect one from the most dangerous type of fear. Those who were following along, did you notice that Prabhupada didn't speak that verse? Did you notice that? Okay. So how did this verse get in there? I will hazard an answer. The devotees at the time didn't know these verses from Gita Mahatmya. But Prabhupada quoted this first verse, Shokabhaya Vivarjita. Shokabhaya Vivarjita. And they recognized that word, bhaya. And so they supplied the verse they knew. Neha vikramanashosti pratyavayo nivijate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mato bhayat. And then they supplied the translation. And that's how it got into the book. Did Prabhupada put it there? No. Sir? Yes, he did. Let's hold those for the end. All your thoughts about that. I'm happy to respond to them. Here I'm just noting the facts that Prabhupada didn't speak this, but it got in apparently because of the confusion on the part of the editors as to what this verse could possibly be. Yes, that's my speculation. You might have noticed some other things, like in the last portion of Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna proclaims very loudly. Did you remember hearing that he proclaims very loudly? Is that there? And you don't remember, but he did. You can take the word of those of us who do remember, or you can go back and listen. The Prabhupada said, proclaims very loudly. Is that there in the second edition? It is. Okay. This is of interest to people who are careful about their English. He indemnifies all the reactions of sins. Is weird, because that means that you're holding blameless the sins. Indemnify means to hold harmless, hold blameless. It's supposed to be that he indemnifies you from all the reactions of sins, not that he indemnifies the sins. Small point. Is it fixed in the second? It is. Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Where Prabhupada talks about, where is that? This Gita Upanishad is the essence of all Vedic literature. Where is that? Bhagavad Gita is just like a cow. Is that where it is? Gita Upanishad? And you might have heard Prabhupada said this Gita Upanishad, which is actually Prabhupada's original title for the book. It was Gita Upanishad, with subtitle Bhagavad Gita as it is. Anyway, it got lost, and it's there in the second edition? It is, okay. And where Prabhupada said one mantra, one hymn, one prayer, you remember that? Is that there in the second edition? It is. Okay. This gives you some idea of the differences between the first edition of Bhagavad Gita as it is and the second edition. And it gives you an idea of what we tried to accomplish. The purpose of the second edition was to correct mistakes and to restore missing material. And I think you could see how that was done from this sample. As I mentioned, this is the only one where we have the benefit of hearing from Srila Prabhupada, the text of Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to show you, if I have it, what we have for the rest of the book. We have what we call original manuscripts, which take three forms according to which part of the book you're in. For roughly the first six chapters, we have text that looks like this. This is typed text, and we understand that it was typed directly by Srila Prabhupada. All of the Sanskrit is correct. All of the all the word-for-word meanings are there. There are no blanks. Everything is pretty clear. And this is typical, by the way, of the type that you used to get from those old Remington and Underwood typewriters of the 1950s. So this, we understand, was typed, and the history is there that that's what Prabhupada was doing, is that he was typing the Bhagavad Gita as it is back in 1966, 67. So for the first six chapters, roughly speaking, maybe a few pages of the seventh, we have those original manuscripts. Then there's a dramatic change. This is from, looks like it's the ninth chapter, Naham Prakasha Sarvasya, is that chapter? Seven. This is chapter seven. Notice the change. The Sanskrit words and the word for word meaning are just left blank. There are blanks in the purport where somebody didn't hear and just put a space. There are abbreviations all over the place, like the prayer of Kunti in the SB, it is said. And you'll find like SPGHs and all sorts of stuff like that, shorthands, HK, HK, KK, HH. Yeah, there's an SPG over there, SPG and SUPG. So this is typical of the transcription that was done. We talked about that later, yesterday a little bit, how the devotees would hear what Prabhupada said on the from his dictation and transcribe that to the best of his abilities, of their abilities. We have these manuscripts up through chapter 12. For the later chapters, at some point, these original manuscripts were lost. That point was sometime before 1980, because when I went looking for them, they were gone. They existed, and in fact, one of my first jobs was to retype that whole book. So I knew they were there, and I expected to see them, but they were gone. So what we have for the last six chapters looks like this. This is, in fact, the result of my work from 1968, one of my first jobs, retyping the text. So that's what you see here is my retyped text. Because I didn't retype all the errors, there are things missing, there are things crossed out that just didn't make it. But there are some things that did make it. And so in the last six chapters, we have, less access to Prabhupada's original material. We have some, but much less than we do for the first 12 chapters. Any questions about this? Okay, this is what we have.
Now,
I'd like to give you an idea of some of the problems that occur when we try to hear Srila Prabhupada. What you're about to see is a movie made by Yadubara Prabhu of Srila Prabhupada dictating a portion of Srimad Bhagavatam. And you'll get to see and hear what it would be like to be in Prabhupada's room hearing him dictate. And you'll get to hear what it was like to be sitting next to the dictaphone transcribing. Ready to go?
Let's see. Let's close this. And let's click the right thing.
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives in this connection a description of the difference of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and ordinary living being. described in the previous verse. Sarvam Kumara Vida Guna Sutabhya Navida Sarvabhya Manabhya Mire. The Bhagavad is that Supreme God, He is omnipotent, omniscient, He knows everything, but the living being does not know actually what is the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the difference between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and ordinary living being.
Do you get some idea of how hard it was to transcribe Srila Prabhupada? Prabhupada's clicking the dictaphone. As he clicks, sometimes he's speaking before the click clicks in. Sometimes he's speaking beyond when it clicks off. It's hard. And those weren't your super MP3 recorders of the modern day. They were primitive. And you used to listen to the sound through this thing that was like a stethoscope. The sound element was down here, and it came up through two little stethoscope tubes. And it was hard. It was one of my jobs, by the way. Satsrup Maharaj did transcribing. I did. Narayani did. Later, Arundhati became our main transcriber. She traveled. She was Pradyumna Prabhu's husband, the wife of our Sanskrit translator, and she traveled along with Pradyumna and Srila Prabhupada, and she learned the Devanagari characters, so that when Prabhupada would quote something, she'd only have to look in the book, and she'd see it. It was that easy. Whereas in contrast, in the 1960s, nobody knew Sanskrit, nobody could read Devanagari, and nobody knew the verses. So that's why the later books, Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, need so much less work, because the transcribers were expert and were even traveling with Srila Prabhupada. Even today, by the way, I see videos of Srila Prabhupada with subtitles, and those of us who are used to hearing from Srila Prabhupada see that so many of those subtitles have mistakes in them. It seems to be what Prabhupada said, but it's not. It's one mistake or another. Any questions about this? Okay. Let's see what I'm going to do for you next. I'm going to show you now some typical revisions, changes as they're called, to Bhagavad Gita as it is. I think they'll give you some idea of what we were dealing with. This, I believe, is from the end of chapter 2. This realization is made possible by working with the fruitive being situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Would anyone like to explain to me what this means? Would anyone like to explain what the fruit of being is? A karmi, okay. But how could a karmi be situated in the fixed conception of the real self? This realization is made possible by working with the fruit of being situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Supreme being, maybe? He's situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Yeah? The living entity working? Why is without fruitive? Without what? Without fruitive results. Then why is he called a fruitive being? This realization is made possible by working with the fruitive being situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Seems like a contradiction. This is the original manuscript. This realization is possible by working with fruitive result being situated on the fixed up conclusion of the real self. And if this were a little bigger, you'd see that written right after with is the word out. This realization is possible by working without fruitive result, being situated on fixed up conclusion of the real self. Is it now clear to you what it means? This is the second edition. This realization is possible when one works without attachment to fruitive results and is situated in the fixed conception of the real self. Would you say that that faithfully conveys what the manuscript has? You would. Would you say that the first edition faithfully conveys what the manuscript says? You wouldn't. Thank you. This is from, I believe, Namam Duskrita Namudha. This is the description of the mudhas. The swine who eat the soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Anyone see a problem with that? Is there a problem? They don't eat soil, do they? Exactly. The swine who eat the night soil will not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. But as you'll see, someone put night in parentheses and put a question mark above it. Apparently because they didn't know what night soil is. What is night soil? Stool. It's basically human excrement used as fertilizer. The swine who eat the night soil do not care to accept sweetmeats made of sugar and ghee. Second edition. Small thing, but fun. In the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.18, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yogamaya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. Kunti prays, O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Sorry, this is cut off. Therefore, I pray that you will also maintain me. Now, I'm going to point out to you one problem here. This is 1.8.18, Kunti Uvacha. O Krishna, I offer my obeisances unto you, because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. Bhagavatam 1.8.18. Now, yeah. Does that match very well? O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest religious principle. Therefore, I pray that you will also maintain me. How good a match would you say that is? Would you say it's a total mismatch? You would. Okay. What do you suppose happened? Hmm? It is, you'd think it's the wrong verse, okay. The prayer of Kunti, this is the original manuscript. The prayer of Kunti in the SB, it is said, blankety blank blank blank. That the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yogamaya, and so ordinary people, they cannot understand. This Yogamaya curtain is also confirmed in the blank. In the 15th, it is said like this, blankety blank blank. In this mantra, the devotee prays, O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the universe, and you are so on and so on and so on. Anyone haven't a clear idea yet of what's happened? Yeah? Yeah, here's what actually happened. In the prayers of Kunti in the Srimad Bhagavatam 1.8.19, it is said that the Lord is covered by the curtain of Yogamaya, and thus ordinary people cannot understand him. 1.8.19, Maya javani kachchannam agyad hokshujam avyayam nalakshase mudhadrasha nato natyadaro yata. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are eternally, the eternally irreproachable factor, covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. Would you say that's a match? You would. That matches, would you say? The Lord is covered by the curtain of Yogamaya, and ordinary people cannot understand him? That matches, huh? So that's the first thing. It's not 1.8.18, it's 1.8.19 where Kunti prays. The next thing is, this Yogamaya curtain is also confirmed in the Ishopanishad, mantra 15, in which the devotee prays, Hiranmayena patrena satyasya pihitam mukam tatvam pushana pavranu satyadharmaya drishyate, which means, O my Lord, you are the maintainer of the entire universe, and devotional service to you is the highest principle. Therefore, I pray that you will also protect me, maintain me. So they got the wrong verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. And then they got Kunti Devi offering a prayer from Ishopanishad. And in the second edition, you have it right. Bhayam, fearlessness, is only possible for one in Krishna consciousness. Problem? Bhayam means fear. Bhayam, and you can see an A has been, AB has been written there. It looks to me like Prabhupada's handwriting. It's not Hayagrivas. Abhayam means that if anyone wants to be free from all fearlessness, he must get to Krishna consciousness. This is bhayam. That is fearlessness. Second edition. Abhayam, fearlessness, is possible only for one in Krishna consciousness. Pretty clear, huh? One more. The devotee demigods and the demons, asuras, once took a sea journey. On this journey, nectar and poison were produced, and Lord Shiva drank the poison. From the nectar were produced many entities, of which there was a horse named Uchchaishrava. Another animal produced from the nectar was maybe Airavata, the elephant. Now, this is far out. The demons and the demigods were enemies, but they once took a sea journey together. Sailing, sailing over the ocean white. Pretty clear what happened? There was journey of the sea, and in which the devotee demigods and the asuras took part. And there was production of nectar and poison also. The poison was drunk by Lord Shiva. What happened? Churning. There was churning of the sea, and in which the devotee demigods and the asuras took part. But nobody knew the story back then. Nobody, Bhagavatam hadn't been published. Sea journey is as good as anything else. The devotee demigods and the demons, asuras, once took part in churning the sea. And I think we have one more here. This, of course, is almost so famous I don't need to do. Yes? Yes. Ocean. Yeah, we retained C. Yeah. Our principle was to try to do the minimum. Not to, you know, change and change and change and change everything, but to do what would be necessary to make the text, to preserve the integrity or convey the integrity of the text. That's always a value judgment, but that was our guiding principle. There is also a planet of trees presided over by Aryama, who represents Krishna. When you'd read this in the 1960s, it was like, far out. You know, Prabhupada said there are millions of planets and they're all inhabited, and, you know, vibhuti bindam, different atmospheres. So somewhere there's a planet of trees presided over by Aryama. The verse is from the 10th chapter, Pitrinam Aryamas Chasmi. Among the Pitris, I am Aryama. And it's even typed in here, actually, or written in here, and again, what looks like Prabhupada's handwriting. The planet of the ancestors, Pitris, not trees. There's also a planet of Pitas, ancestors, presided over by Aryama, who represents Krishna. Now, that's the end of this sort of spiffy little presentation that I have here, but I have one more. Do you know about the Pumundi? You don't know about the Pumundi. You're really missing something. Okay, I'm going to... Again, this is not as spiffy, because I haven't spiffified it yet. But I think it's kind of cool, so I'm going to show you this. Bhagavad Gita, as it is, first edition, chapter 12, text 11. You've got the book. Whoever. Chapter 12... Text 11. It may be that one is unable to even sympathize with the activities of Krishna consciousness and so on. For one who has such a problem, it's advised that he sacrifice the accumulated result of his activities to some good cause. Such procedures are described in the Vedic rules. There are many descriptions of sacrifices and special functions of the Pumundi, or special work in which the result of one's previous action may be applied. Now, among the scholars present here, which of you is familiar with the Pumundi and can tell us about the Pumundi? We know about the Agnihotra ceremony. We know about the Karbadan Samskara. But what's this Pumundi? No one's familiar with the Pumundi. You can look it up in the Veda base, but you only get one hit. And this is it, Pumundi. Prabhu, what's the pum? I have a question. What's the pumundi? Okay. As I said, this is not so spiffy, so I have to open another one. So I looked at that and said, there ain't no such thing, a pumundi. It doesn't make any sense. So I tried to put something sensible. There are many descriptions of sacrifices and special functions of punya, or special work in which the results of one's previous action may be applied. That makes sense? You all know what punya is? Does it fit the context? If you can't do this, do this. If you can't do that, then sacrifices and punya, it works, right? Okay. But our translators are the best people in the world. They read the text and they read it again and they read it again because they have to find the right words in their language. And so they're meditating deeply, deeply on these on the text, which is why a lot of errors are brought to our attention. A lot of them come from the translators because they just read it and read it and read it, and sometimes they scratch their heads and they say, it doesn't make sense. So one of the translators got perplexed about this pumundi, and even punya somehow or other didn't quite work for her. So she went to her production manager, who would have been Govinda Madhava in North European BBT, and asked him, you know, could you look this up in the commentaries? Because we know that Prabhupada followed Vishwanath, especially Baladev. So he did. And this is the commentary on the verse by Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. And we won't read all of it, but Tatacha Pala Bisanti Shunyar Agnihotra Darsha Purnamasyadi Bir. Agnihotra, fire sacrifice. And Darsha Purnamasyadi Adi Bir means and so on. So Darsha Purnamasya, or Darsha Purnamasi. Now, what's that? Well, I've already explained what it means. No, I won't. I haven't explained what it means. Here's what it means. Agnihotra Darsha Purnamasyadi Bir, fire sacrifice and full moon sacrifices. And so the explanation is that when what the devotees heard as pumundi was actually Srila Prabhupada saying full moon day. Which is the way it now is in the Veda base, and this is one of the very small revisions that we make from time to time. Okay, I think this is enough of examples, unless I want to talk about the canals of Dwarka. I could do, but anyway, I think we'll leave it at this. You've seen enough. Questions? Madhuji?
Yeah,
I'm just going to say one thing. It's really not testimony to how hard I worked. It's especially testimony to how hard the original editors had to work. You know, because we had so many advantages later. We had Sanskrit editors we could go to. We had the original text that we could go to. We had the advantage of 1982, so 20 years of, you know, reading Prabhupada's books. We had the advantages that all of Bhagavatam is in print. And the original editors had none of that. So it's really a credit to their hard work that they were able to give us such a good text to begin with, so that we only had to minimally revise it. Prabhupada's books for a penny plus shipping. It's fine with us.
No
Now, if we could get them all together, all those penny books, you know, and get them in one shipment, that would be great. But Amazon doesn't let you do that.
You couldn't sell them one for full price. You have to sell them again.
Yeah, they're... But thank you for thinking about these things. It's good. But that's one thing you can do. You know, people say, well, I don't have any money. Tell them, go to Amazon.com and buy it for a penny. Yes.
Thank you so much for giving us an opportunity to ask a question, because it's something that I've lost sleep over. You know, so I posed a question to Ramananda and Garuda Muni last week. So they didn't think that you changed the Bhagavad Gita, but they felt that you edited out a lot of Prabhupada's unique sayings, how he'd say things. But I actually found that for myself that when Prabhupada gave lecture from his own book, that because you change things, that what you changed the things he was speaking about, and that led to confusion. But there was one specific part in 261 where I felt personally, to me, it looked like my bad philosophy that you put in, where you talked about the Vishnu platform, where you changed it from what Prabhupada said. And that, for me,
That's an interesting one, the Vishnu platform. I was really convinced that I'd seen that I was working from a manuscript that said the Vishnu platform. And when I went back to look for it, I couldn't find it. Somebody asked me, you know, same thing, what about this Vishnu platform thing? And I went through the manuscripts I had. I couldn't find the Vishnu platform. And so I sent a note to Dravida and said, you know, next time around, Vishnu form. So it was my mistake.
Maharaj, all these mistakes I love. Not over laughing at them. I have no problem with them. Mm-hmm. But I feel that's my bad philosophy, you know, and I feel that
it was fixed.
One mistake, these boys are distributing thousands of these books, and that one mistake is enough for the Ritvix to hammer us, it's enough for the Narayan people to hammer us, it's enough that it's a serious mistake.
Let's take a look at it.
I'm happy with Prabhupada's so-called mistakes because they're there for the next 10,000 years.
Okay, let's take a look at that Vishnu platform. It's, okay. There it is. No, not that. Therefore, Gadadhar and Srivas, although on the Vishnu platform, that's not the one we're looking for. Here it is. Okay. Okay. The so-called yogis who meditate on something which is not on the Vishnu platform simply waste their time. And here in the original manuscript it says, meditating something which is not Vishnu form. And here's my comment. Here the critics have detected a genuine error. The text should read, not the Vishnu form. The first edition has it right. The second edition has it wrong. I don't know how the error came about. The BBT will correct it for future printings. Correction applied in the Vedabase 2003 release. My mistakes are not sacred. The BBT has a consistent policy. The errors of typists and editors need not be preserved. So you are right. It's a mistake. And it's been fixed.
Is it fixing our books?
I believe it is.
Can we have a look?
Sure, have a look.
Since 2003.
Well, Vedabase, it's fixed. I hope it's been fixed in the book. Do you have take a look at it? What verse is it? 261? Someone check?
Yeah.
Okay, they haven't fixed it. Bad. Yeah, what printing?
Your Honor?
The date is on the copyright page. You're on the right page. Look there. Does it give a printing date?
Copyright 1972, 1986. The Bumpkin
Trust. Okay. Mm-hmm. I hope that it's been.
This has been an attempt for a while. This is an old one.
Well, there's revised second editions, but then there's printings. Basically, revised edition is something where you do wholesale changes. And then there's a printing in which you don't even mention that you changed something like that. It's got it right.
It's been corrected in that edition. You're free to go.
Thank you, Bhattaji. It has been fixed.
Can you have a look at the
date? There is a God after all. That question has been asked over here by Prabhuji, and you're bringing it up again. I will respond to that. I guess I should respond to it now. Let's see. In fact, I can go online and respond to it. I'll give you the response that's online, if I can get online, which I think I can. Let's see. ISKCON. Good, we like ISKCON. The question, in essence, is that Srila Prabhupada read these books. And if there were something wrong, he would have said something. He read them, he accepted them. So who are we to take these texts that he's not only written but read and implicitly approved and monkey with them? Is that a fair statement of the objection? Okay, good. Let me find that question online, if I can. I think I'm now online. True.
So
it makes it problematic. Okay. You can all do what I'm doing when you get home. Oh, I'm offline and I can't browse. Why is that? Reception's not so good. Oh, that's too bad. Well, basically, you'll find an extended explanation on the web. First let me start out with a summary. Shruta Kirti Prabhu has mentioned in his Nectar notes that when Prabhupada read his books, he didn't read like an editor. You know, he's reading as a preacher giving class, or he's reading and relishing. But he's not reading as an editor. When I read as an editor, I read with this text in front of me here, that text in front of me there. I go back and forth. I say, you know, does it match? Is it right? I ponder over it. That's what I do when I read as an editor. When I read as a reader or when I read as a preacher, you know, I just read and carry on. So Prabhupada, when he was reading his books, didn't read as an editor, generally. Now, sometimes he would say, that's a mistake. But in general, that was Shruti Kirti's comment. Now, when you go back and look at first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, that's another book I edited or revised or changed. But I did it in like 1975 or 6. First canto was edited by the same editor who edited Bhagavad Gita as it is, Hayagriva Prabhu. And I revised it for the same reason that I revised Bhagavad Gita as it is. That going through the text, and of course we had Prabhupada's original Indian Bhagavatams to refer to, I saw things that didn't match, things that had been lost, things where the wrong point had been picked up, things that didn't quite seem to make sense. So I went back through the first canto, and I revised especially the translations, especially the first two chapters. There were a lot of things that needed work in the first two chapters, so I revised them. And I took the translations and typed up, I think, all of them or a sample of them, and I wrote a cover letter to Srila Prabhupada. This is what I did, and this is why I did it, and is it okay? And I put it in an envelope, and I brought it upstairs because I was in Brooklyn when Prabhupada was visiting our Brooklyn temple. So I went upstairs with the idea that I'll leave this package with Prabhupada's secretary and, you know, maybe I'll get an answer. Or I will get an answer. But when I got up there, Prabhupada was sitting there. And, you know, so why have you come? So I explained what it was about, and very briefly, Prabhupada said, read. So I began reading the translations, and Prabhupada was listening quite carefully. And after about four or five texts, Prabhupada said, so what you have done? I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, I revised it to make it closer to what you originally said. Prabhupada said, what I have said? I said, yeah. Prabhupada said, then it is all right. Now, if you go back through the folio, you'll find quite a number of examples, and I've given a batch of them on the website, where Prabhupada reads from those verses, says nothing about them, just accepts them, and yet they don't match what he said. And when I proposed to revise them, he approved. So my conviction is that when I did the same thing for Bhagavad Gita as it is, following the same principle, with the same resources and working on revising the text done by the same editor, I would receive the same approval from Srila Prabhupada. Even though he'd read it, I could have said, that's it, done deal, sealed. He read it, he approved it, it's right. And yet, it wasn't right. And when I revised it and put it back closer to what Prabhupada had said, Prabhupada approved. That's the principle on which I worked. Now, I understand that you may have a different opinion. You may not find that persuasive. You may stick to it. And that's fine. I have no problem with that. If you feel you'd rather read the first edition because Prabhupada read it and approved it, great. I'd like to point out, though, what the bed is that you're making for yourself that you lie in. You also have to accept, because Prabhupada, you know, read from his books, unless you want to be selective and say, you know, those verses which Prabhupada specifically read from, Prabhupada shouldn't have changed. But if you want to apply it to the whole book, say, well, Prabhupada read the book, he accepted the book as it was approved by Prabhupada, and therefore sealed, no changes. Okay, that's fine. And that's an opinion, and you're entitled to that opinion, and you could give good reasons for that opinion. And I don't claim that, you know, I have the only opinion for which reasons can be given or arguments can be given. You can also make an argument for that position. But when we make an argument, we have to accept the consequences of that argument. And the consequence is then Prabhupada approved Pumundi. Prabhupada approved the sea journey that the demigods and demons went on. Prabhupada approved Kunti offering a prayer from Isha Upanishad. Prabhupada approved leaving out all those verses from the Gita Mahatmya. Prabhupada approved putting in, abhaya instead of bhaya. Prabhupada approved neha vikramanashosti, svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate bahato mahato bhayat instead of bhaya shoka vivarjita. Prabhupada approved. Oh, the list goes on. That's the position, that's the consequence of that position. For me, I think the consequence is, you know, rules out the argument. You know, I would look and say, well, if that's the consequence, I don't think the argument holds. But if you choose to look at it differently and say, well, that's the argument, and, you know, even though those consequences are there, there might be worse consequences from changing or whatever other reason you have. You know, I respect that. Everyone's entitled to a different view. But the view of my view and the BBT trustees and the view of the GBC is that it was a legitimate exercise. Yes, Prabhu. Yes, they do. This one included.
Well, exactly. And these, as older devotees, feeling uncomfortable, because it's not just at Maharaj, I see the points you make, especially if don't even argue and then the truth. But a lot of devotees say, why couldn't you make footnotes or my devotees more recently? Because, like Kashmir Guru, I also think about this a lot, just to see that the danger is we do.
Yeah, I think that's a very legitimate objection. Tampered with. Yeah, I think that's, you know, let me, what's the word, support and endorse your concerns, because they're crucial concerns for every follower of Srila Prabhupada. Our whole movement rests on Prabhupada's books. And if the books are adulterated, if the books are tampered with, if the books are inadvertently moved in from the straight line they should be on to a curved line or deviant line, then everything's lost. Everything's lost. Our faith, our conviction, our guidance for 10,000 years rests on these books. And if the integrity of the books is in doubt, then everything's in doubt. And therefore, it's an entirely legitimate concern for every devotee, senior devotees especially, because we're supposed to be more informed and responsible, and for every devotee. We should all be concerned about the integrity of Prabhupada's books. And I'm totally on board with you about that. Now, moving to the ramifications of that. Okay, I've undertaken a large-scale revision, and Dravida Prabhu has done revisions to on a lesser scale to other books. How do you know we didn't mess up? How do you know we didn't mess up? For the Bhagavad Gita, to answer those concerns, I've done two things. The first is that every change that has been sort of screamed about on the internet, and pardon me, but some people do scream. One person in particular, bless his polluted heart. All the changes that have been broadcast as, you know, they did this, they did that, they've all been listed on bbtedit.com with three columns, or two columns really. First column shows the first and second editions, the way I showed it here, what changed, what's been added, what's been subtracted. And the second column shows the original manuscript. So that you can look at it yourself and say, you know, why did they take out Varnashram Dharma and put prescribed duties? Why did they change X to Y? Why did they insert this? Why did they leave out that? all of the ones that I've seen where somebody's made an objection, including the one you brought up about the Vishnu platform, they're all online at bbtedit.com. All the headline ones, you know, the people bring up, they tend to be the same ones. What about this? What about that? And, you know, there's things I've answered 12 years ago. They're all online. You can see them at bbtedit.com. That's the first thing I've done. Second thing is, a few years ago, Dravida Prabhu was going through a trunk in Los Angeles or San Diego, and he found something interesting. What it was something that I thought had been lost. It was this edition of Bhagavad Gita, the 1972 edition, with my changes written into it. It was the edition that I'd actually worked on, the edition from which the 1983 edition was made, you know, where you can see every change I made. We've scanned those pages, and all of those pages are now online for chapters 1 through 7 at bbtedit.com. So you don't have to like have a computer program that does comparisons or any of that. You can see every change. And for every change of substance, you know, I haven't gone into every comma, for every change of substance, there's an explanation attached. And for almost all of those, there's a little image attached showing the relevant portion of the original manuscript. So you can, you know, pore through it, examine it, cross-examine it, fine-tooth comb it, and, you know, it's there. It's on the table. Look and see, you know, is there an editorial mistake here? Did the guy goof up again? Is it another Vishnu platform thing? What have they done? But of course, you may not go through the whole thing, but anything you have a concern about, for the first 7 chapters, and the 8th one is coming, the goal is to have them all online. For anything you have a concern about, you can go back and say, what did they do, and why did they do it?
You know what my fear is, my biggest fear? Mm-hmm. The Srila Prabhupada in his wisdom, what's happening, for better or worse, is there's become a split over this.
Yes, it's true. Right.
Or you yourself write your own book on Bhagavad Gita, show it all the things.
Right.
And we keep the old one, keep the
right.
And then those scholars who want to see
right.
The editor or the transcribers made mistakes on
this.
They could then study.
Right.
The scholars. But me, when I came to Prabhupada, there were things that you don't understand. But Prabhupada also said,
no, it's not wrong. Yeah, you became devotees because of the first edition. Right.
So, you know, inherently, essentially, everything's in there. There may be these points.
Right.
But there's also a style that came out between His Divine Grace and higher beings working together.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And when you, I'm in a study group every Tuesday, read Bhagavatam, we push through. In Bhagavatam, everyone's got different, it's called 2-3 versions, whatever that kind of version.
There's hardly any major differences in Bhagavatam, except for first canto.
I do find there's a change in the style. In
the first canto, apart from the first canto, which was personally approved by Srila Prabhupada, apart from the changes to the first canto, which were quite extensive and which he personally approved, in 1976, roughly, personally approved, apart from those, as to my knowledge, and I'm in a position to know, changes to the Bhagavatam have been very slight. It's only when we find something that's a verifiable error. We don't go back and edit the Bhagavatam for style. We don't go back and edit it and say, you know, it would sound better this way. We edit it when there's a major grammatical error. I mean major, one that's going to like trip the reader and have him fall in his face. When there's a clear editorial mistake, we fix it. Those tend to be, excuse me, they're quite small. There's not, you know, you would really have to like, you're not going to, a normal reader just wouldn't notice unless he was really alert, because the you know, what would it be? It would be like estimated 0.05%, 0.02%, something like that. It's very, very slight. There's no major revision that's been done to Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, please.
What I was driving at is that the divine grace and his wisdom, if when he left the planet, he was prepared 7, 8, 9 months, he wrote his will, he did these were in place. And I just can't get over this hurdle that Srila Prabhupada would have said, oh, and, you know, any revisions of my books, Jayavada Maharaj, and they can find the mistakes.
Right. Okay. System of management, there should be no changes. Actually, the system of management, if you look back to the BBT document, which is the relevant one, Prabhupada says, I have full faith in the trustees to do everything necessary regarding the trust, which is where his books are. That was Prabhupada's system of management. I've appointed trustees, they're in charge. I followed them. I wasn't a trustee. They said, do this work. I did it. They had been given the authority by Srila Prabhupada. They were placed in charge of the books. The books are essentially trust property, and he entrusted it to them. If you listen to the so-called rascal editors conversation, you'll find... Well, because Prabhupada didn't call it that, but it's been... That's the name that's been given to it. But let's say, okay, if you listen to the properly titled Rascal Editor's Conversation, okay, you'll find that the controversy that was raised concerned a mistake in his books. It's not the mistake people thought it was. Muni Asada Prishtoham. And it says, But I let you go on a little bit, and I'm going to go on a little bit, and I'll try. I'm not going to miss your point. I have your point in mind, and if I miss it by the time I'm done, come back to me and say, Maharaj, that's fine, but you missed my point. But I've been listening. I'll try to be good. If you listen to that conversation, they got the wrong error. They thought that the error was that it said this is relevant, when it should have said that they're sadhus. When you listen to it, the devotees who are hearing, they misunderstood what the mistake Prabhupada was complaining about. This is relevant. They said, it's sadhus. It should be, you know, what's a sadhu? A sadhu is a saintly person. So why this is relevant? That's what they thought the mistake was. What the mistake actually was, Munyo sadhu prishtoham. Sadhu, the sages. That's wrong. It should have said, no, Munia. Munia, of the sages. Prabhupada said, that's wrong. It read, of the sages. It should have been, the sages. Oh, the sages. Some rascal editor had changed it from "Oh, the sages" to "of the sages." But it's vocative voice, which means addressing someone, and so it should have said "Oh, sages." That was the mistake. And Prabhupada, you know, livid about it. He's very upset. When you read the conversation, you'll find that they're reading to Srila Prabhupada from an old edition of the book. And in fact, as you trace the later correspondence that went back and forth between Srila Prabhupada's secretaries and between Tamal Krishna Maharaj, Prabhupada's secretary, and the BBT about this, you'll find out that the mistake had already been corrected by me and the rascal editors in Los Angeles. So that if Prabhupada had picked up the revised book, which he didn't ask us to revise, but if he'd picked up the book that was then current, you know, he had what was there in India where he was sitting, if he'd picked up the book that we'd fixed, it would have said, "Oh, sages." So we were doing exactly what Prabhupada wanted us to do. Make sure that the book matches what he actually said. And when you go back and read that conversation again, you'll see that Prabhupada is blasting with, you know, I've praised Hayagriva Prabhu, and justly so, but Prabhupada's blasting Hayagriva for leaving out "We never went to the moon, an easy journey to other planets." And Prabhupada's saying, "What can be done, the rascal editors," and so on. And Prabhupada's taking it very seriously and saying, "Write to Satsvarup." And the other person he mentions he doesn't mention, Tamal Krishna Maharaj mentions Satsvarup, Jayadvaita. And Prabhupada says, "He is good." So my humble submission is that we haven't done anything different from what we were doing in Srila Prabhupada's time. This is what we were doing then. We didn't need a fresh order, "This is what you should do." We were already doing it with Prabhupada's approval. And I really should publish the follow-on correspondence from that conversation, because there was significant correspondence from that conversation. And there were samples sent by Radha Balava, the production manager, of the kind of mistakes that I was fixing, the kind of revisions that I was doing. And we got the response back that these kind of corrections are all right. So I'm not working from just, somebody who arrives on the scene, picks up the book, says, "What's going on here? Let me do X, Y, Z." I'm working from years of experience with... Excuse me just a second. I'm working from years of experience and years of instructions, which are not known to everyone. BBT is where this work has been done for 10 years during Prabhupada's time and so many years afterwards. And within the BBT, there's working knowledge of these things. If you go to bbtedit.com, you'll find a letter from Pradyumna, who was traveling with Srila Prabhupada at the time, writing to the BBT editors about mistakes and saying, Prabhupada, quoting Prabhupada as, "What's done is done, but you should keep a list of these and fix them." I'm not making it up. Go to the site. It's online. Read it. It's in writing from Prabhupada's Sanskrit editor, who was traveling with Prabhupada at the time. These mistakes should be fixed. So I humbly submit to you that we have both oral and written instructions from Srila Prabhupada to do these things. I also agree with you that it requires enormous care, that we should all be seriously concerned to see that unwanted conclusions, unwanted deviations, unwanted stylistic innovations, or anything creeps in. And with that in mind, I sent those translations out to all the English-speaking devotees so that they could give their input. With that in mind, the GBC reviewed everything. With that in mind, the BBT trustees reviewed everything. It wasn't taken lightly. And we're still open for input. If you find something that's wrong, and people do. Dhir Govinda Prabhu in Alachua is a model example of a helpful devotee. When he finds something that looks wrong to him, where it looks like the editors have done something, you know, philosophically questionable or something, he writes us the most polite letter in the world, lays out his arguments in clear and cogent fashion, and submits them for us to consider. With the result that in one important case, we've changed something back, and in another important case, wrote him a 7-page letter or a 5-page letter, and he wrote me back and said, thank you very much. So we're always open. We're always as concerned as you can imagine that Prabhupada's words be preserved, that his legacy be preserved, that his style of presentation be preserved. We really are. Over to you.
The $64 million question is when, and what I'm hearing from you now is never, when will the editing stop?
That's the $64 million question, and you're absolutely right. When will this editing stop? And we were thinking very, you know.
Otherwise,
anything could happen.
When is?
Where's the definitive edition of Bhagavad of Prabhupada's books, and where does it stop? And you're absolutely right. This is the question, and we review this question once every year or so. It perennially comes up at our BBT trustees meetings. When are we just going to seal the books? And we've thought at various times, seal them now. And then then people find more things, like the canons of Dwarka. Give me a moment, because it's such a. I understand your question is when. Arsha Prayog, before you bring in Arsha Prayog, because that's a separate argument, the question is when. And we keep asking ourselves this question, and we would have liked to have said, you know, last Tuesday, we seal them and that's it, we put them on the shelf. And to a certain extent, they are sealed because we get a lot of things that we look at and we say they're wrong and we say, well, it's not that important. It's more important just to leave things as they are. Our tendency is leave things as they are. Unless there's something that really screams out as an error. It's still under discussion. My tendency is to think that they're going to be sealed when the present editors leave the scene. That when before Dravida and I are gone, we're going to say, you know, we were with Prabhupada, and the next generation will not have been, you know, physically in Prabhupada's association, and whatever is done is done. And, you know, any further, we hope we've caught, like, you know, practically all any error that matters, and whatever we haven't caught, you know, let somebody write it in his book and say, you know, on page XYZ, it says this, but it's an error. That's where we're going with it. With the caveat, you know, when Dravida and I are dead, we don't have any power anymore. You know, I can't do anything. I can't grab the guy by the hand and say, stop your hand, thou shalt not, you know, red pen anything. But our intention is that this is the direction that we would leave. That, you know, we've done so much, we've tried to catch as much as we can. We believe it's in reasonably good shape. It's certainly not in the shape of anything like the 1972 Gita with, you know, sea churnings and all of that. So leave it and seal it. That's what we tend to at this point.
So those are the last one is
yes.
This is what we call mistakes. So we discussed the ask by us. If there are mistakes, that is so-called mistakes. I mean, they are, we can see that there's a mistake in somebody's understanding.
Yeah. Yeah.
So my humble opinion is that those could have been footnotes in, we would have all still been on the same definitive position. And everyone would be happy. What's
okay. Let me go ahead. Get it out. No, go ahead. No, I respect your concerns, Bhajari Prabhu. Please go ahead. No, I'm glad that you came.
So, it just seems to us, a lot of us, and we discussed it. And somebody gave me 5 or 6 copies of the revised.
Mm-hmm.
I have them in my cafe. Someone buys it. I don't think they're not going to become the devotees.
Right.
I don't have a massive issue.
Right.
With it, except the style, and I think some of the styles can change. But I can leave it at that. But my strong opinion is that these obvious mistakes which we had at Chakrabhupa could have been footnoted.
Mm-hmm.
And as a scholar, and as Srila Prabhupada's probably the most prominent editor who has stayed in good standing with this stuff, other editors have come and gone. The people that gave you the job, that's why... They come and gone. Bhagavan and Harishali came and gone. And I came again back. So I've come and gone and I'm back. So we have, you know, you mentioned Sashrut Maharaj, I won't go into it over there, but we've all made mistakes. You stay solid, you've been there, and you have my respect for that. But I still honestly believe that this split that's been caused between the love brothers, if not the second edition, the different edition, could have been tactfully avoided if we had just footnoted, or you yourself had written a scholarly study of the mistakes of the
yeah.
And that then we could have sold the continued selling the divinity of Bhagavad Gita, that is divine grace left. And anyone who wants to say, well, hang on, this planet was here. Jai Bhai Maharaj has written a wonderful book that explains all these things. So
okay.
The original divinity of Gita, you have your book. For the scholars, because most of us are not scholars, I read Prabhupada's original book, and I find the synthesis of. The funny thing is, yesterday I was listening to Prabhupada dictating notes to Hayagriva
about the Lord Chaitanya play. Oh, it was.
But what I noticed that was Hayagriva was quite mundane.
Mm-hmm.
He was dealing with Prabhupada, all due respect.
Mm-hmm.
Still, Srila Prabhupada even paid him to help edit the book.
Mm-hmm.
But I found in the end the synthesis of Srila Prabhupada and Hayagriva's writings, because Hayagriva was.
Yeah.
You know, he had his way. And I just feel that Prabhupada is happy with them. And if he hadn't been happy with them, before he left on November 14th, he would have said,
okay. Okay. Let's address two things. The footnoted edition, or the edition with a commentary separately published, and Prabhupada's style, or the synthesis of Prabhupada's style in Hayagriva. As far as style goes, I think you'll find that the second edition more closely matches what Srila Prabhupada said, both in substance and in style. And therefore the objection really comes down to the translations, because the purports, there's not much to say about style in terms of anything done. It comes down to the style of the translations. And I will grant you that the translations done by Hayagriva Prabhu are more poetic in some instances. They're more poetic in some instances. And therefore you have sort of a choice that his are more poetic, but the 72 edition matches more closely what Srila Prabhupada said, matches more closely the Sanskrit, what Krishna said, and matches more closely the word-for-word meanings. Because Prabhupada's giving the Sanskrit, the word-for-word meanings, and the translation. And sometimes in the first edition, you'll find that the word-for-word meanings and the translation doesn't follow from the word-for-word meanings. When you try to match them up, which is what I do when I carefully study, they don't match. Why don't they match? Because the translation was borrowed from another edition. And Hayagriva Prabhu had permission to do that. It's not wrong. And as you said, it's stylistically pleasing. Sometimes it's not a synthesis of Prabhupada and Hayagriva. Forgotten his name from the Divine Light Mission, whose translations were sometimes borrowed. And that's documented on bbtedit.com. And that they're nicely done. They're beautiful. But they don't match Prabhupada's word for word because they're not Prabhupada's translations. So you get this sort of trade-off. And recognizing the literary quality of Hayagriva Prabhu's translations, when possible, or when, to a large extent, I just left them. I could have made it closer to Prabhupada, more aggressively close to Prabhupada. But I didn't, for that consideration that he's edited them nicely and they read nicely. But sometimes there are major differences in meaning. Sometimes there are the discrepancies between what Prabhupada's word for word in the translations. And sometimes there are other problems with them, grammatical problems and others. So that's what you get in the translations. And being sensitive to that, that's why people say, well, why did you only send out the translations to everyone? That was why. Because I knew that, we memorize the translations, we sort of get those in our head. So that's why I sent out those translations for everyone to give their input on. So it's also a valid position. You say, well, these were more poetic. And that's fine. If someone feels these were more poetic, that's okay. But you have a choice of two platforms. People want to have both stand on both platforms. We want it to be closer to Prabhupada, more faithful to Prabhupada, and we want it to be more poetic. And you can't have both. I'm coming to your other point. I was answering one point, and now I'm sorry, Brajahari Prabhu. Brajahari Prabhu, please bear with me. I haven't forgotten. Brajahari Prabhu, I apologize. Yes, we can. Now, it wouldn't be better. And now I'll explain why. I hadn't forgotten your point. I mentioned at the beginning there were two. Please bear with me. I'm sorry that I'm sorry that it takes me so long to explain something that I should explain more quickly. Why not footnotes? It is an option. It's done. It's acceptable especially in what are called critical editions, which are published by scholars, you'll find footnotes employed profusely. So it's a legitimate way to do revision. The problem is that the amount of revision involved, that the samples that I've given you are, they're sort of conspicuous. They're, as you say, some of them are absurd and they make you laugh. But they're only a small sample. If I were to take you through... If you go to bbtedit.com and look at, don't go through the whole thing, it's too much work, but look at some of the representative pages, especially take chapter 7 maybe, because that's where the dictation started, and look at the number of revisions that have been done, either to insert Sanskrit or to correct a grammatical mistake or to do something like fix Kunti's prayer and the Isha-Upanishad mix up and to get the right verse number. And the number of footnotes that you would find in that book would be profuse. Okay, so then why? So that, let's say the footnote approach is too much. Now, first of all, I'm increasing the cost of the book because I have to add all those pages for the footnotes. I'm burdening the ordinary reader with all that stuff. So footnotes are out. Now, why not just keep it as it is? And I write a separate book saying, you know, this was a mistake, this is a mistake, this is a mistake, this is a mistake, this is a mistake. Problem is that the readers aren't going to get that. It's only specialists. You know, the ISKCON devotees were really going to drill down and scrutinize. They're going to get my treatise on what the errors were. And meanwhile, the book is going to be full of errors. It's going to have Kunti offering prayers from Isha-Upanishad. It's going to have demigods and demons taking sea journeys. It's going to have grammatical errors. It's going to have words spelled wrong. It's going to have things left out that Prabhupada put in. That's another category of things. Whole purports.
It's still going to be potent.
It's going to be potent. It'll be fine. There'll be nothing wrong with it, except that it'll have lots of errors and lots of stuff left out. But it will be serviceable. And it can be distributed. We publish it for people who'd prefer to distribute it. It's available. But we think that we're doing the reader and the author a disservice by leaving out content that he intended to have in, by having errors that he didn't intend that could have been fixed, and just having a website or something available somewhere that says, you know, if you'd like to find out the way it should have been, read this. Excuse me? How can we be certain that we left out things that we didn't, that he wanted put in?
In other words, when you read through that part you showed for the Sanskrit results in the Gita Mahatmya, he must have read it
and he didn't say anything. Exactly. Why didn't we just leave it? Perfectly acceptable. Take everything that he left out and leave it left out. You can do that. And you'll make devotees and people will read it and be happy. And the only people who won't be happy will the people who say, why are you holding back from us this material that Prabhupada gave us? You know you have it. It's in your manuscripts. You're keeping it locked up in the Bhaktivedanta archives and you won't show it to anyone.
No, I disagree with that entirely.
Excuse me. It's he left it out or the editors left it out? It's out and he read it. And you can make a case. I'm going to stop here pretty soon. But you can make the case. It was out. He didn't ask for it to be put in. And it can be left out. That's a perfectly legitimate position to hold. And for those who hold that position, I respect it. It's a reasonable position. That's how it was. That's how we want it always to be. You know, as they say, warts and all. You know, it was... Pardon me, there's a wart. Pumundi is a wart. Or if you don't like the word wart, call it an error. It's not arshaprayog. Arshaprayog means the mistakes of the acharya should be respected. Our transcribers who didn't know a full moon day, pardon me, our typists who couldn't tell the difference between a pumundi and the full moon day are not acharyas, and arsha prayog does not apply to their errors any more than it applies to my errors.
I have one final statement.
Absolutely, Prabhu. Absolutely.
When all of these amendments are made, and when you read the body has wrote us down, this is the definitive edition. Before you go, are you going to change the first part of the Bhagavatam? Srila Prabhupada says, even though it is irregularly composed, Srila Prabhupada states at the very beginning of the Srila Bhagavatam that that there are going to be mistakes in this. It's going to be irregularly composed. So are you going to remove that before you go? Because it will be perfect.
No.
As it's still not going to be perfect. When do we get it?
When do we get?
If you make it perfect by going over with a subcom year after year after year, in the final edition of the Bhagavatam, you have to take out that.
Okay.
Because there will be no more.
I understand. Irregularly composed. First of all, to answer, you know, what's obviously a rhetorical question, no, we're not going to take it out. Now, Prabhupada, you know, very, you know, you can say touchingly is admitting his frailty in presenting a book in a foreign language and admitting that it will have irregularities and so on, and appealing to the good wishes of the reader to accept it with all of its apparent imperfections. And we respect that. On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada engaged people whose service it was to fix errors, to remove irregularities, to reconcile discrepancies, to fix things. That was the service Prabhupada gave Hayagriva, Ray Rama, Satsarup Maharaj, and me. We do have correspondence from Prabhupada where he's complaining about errors, where he says one error will ruin the whole book, where he's instructing us that two editors should read everything because one editor may, you know, miss something and the second editor should catch it. And we know that we're not going to make it materially perfect. And even deliberately, we know that there are, for example, there are mistakes in Prabhupada's books that we leave because they're Prabhupada's mistakes. Prabhupada says, for example, it just came to my attention again that Prabhupada in First Canto says that Bhishma Dev, something about Bhishma Dev not being present at the Rajasuya sacrifice, or being present at the Rajasuya sacrifice, being or not being present at the Rajasuya sacrifice. And if, when you read, not being present at the Rajasuya sacrifice, it's in First Canto. And when you read Krishna book and when you're familiar with the history, you know without a doubt that Bhishma Dev was there. Yeah, he's saying, you know, yes, he should be elected the first person to be honored. Krishna should be, because he's, you know, I'm supposed to be a brahmachari, but Krishna's 1,000 times the brahmachari I am. So he's right on the scene. Prabhupada has him on the scene, and yet Prabhupada's writing in the first canto that he wasn't there. And, you know, devotees bring this to our attention and say, but, you know, this is a discrepancy, and we say, Arsha Prayog. Because it's not an editor's mistake. That's Arsha Prayog. When the Acharya says it, he said it. You know, we're leaving it because that's what he said. Arsha Prayog. We're aware of the principle. We respect the principle. But we don't extend the principle to my mistakes, Hayagriva's mistakes, the typist's mistakes. We believe from the instructions we received, from the training that we had, from the experiences we had, that Prabhupada wanted us to fix such errors, and that's what we've done. We don't keep reading the books, looking for errors, but as errors are brought to our attention, they're carefully judged. Usually they're small these days because of the nature of things. And when they're editorial errors, we fix them. And that's our principle. And I'm going to close in about a minute. There's three more questions, but I need direction from the in charges because we've gone an hour over time, and I And the time is not mine to decide about what should I do. Excuse me? Okay. I'll just say two or three more things. That is 2 minutes more. And then any other questions that you have, please feel free to speak to me after the class. Please feel free to write me, jswami@pamho.net. If you forget my email address, please feel free to put a comment on the website, bbtedit.com, and it will come to us. And I'll be happy to, you know, to respond. I just wanted to thank you, though, before you go, Brajahari. Okay. I just wanted to thank all of you for listening. I especially wanted to thank Brajahari, because if it's all yes men sitting here agreeing with everything I say, then we don't get depth in our thought. So I... Okay. No. The only thing that's wrong is if you don't buy those books from the BBT. As long as you buy those, we have them. If we don't have them, place an order, we'll get them for you. We've kept them in print for the last many years. Madhu Pandit and company prefer that edition in Bangalore. We've kept it in print for well over a decade. Bhagavad Gita. Srimad Bhagavatam, there's hardly anything to talk about. The revisions are so slight. Really. I mean, they're so slight that I almost don't... Nobody's gone through it and revised Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna book, yes. Isha Upanishad, yes. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Srimad Bhagavatam, no. Yeah. And read why and read to what extent. And you'll see, you may not be unhappy about it, but I would like to thank you again for coming, because I know that it's not easy to walk into an assembly like this and be the person who has a different opinion. My sadness also. I would also, and I could talk about the history of how that rift has come about, largely through self-motivated people, and people who've deliberately misrepresented the truth in a propagandistic way, so that something that really should have been, you know, unexceptionable, that should have been easily accepted by everyone, became polarized, largely because of people's personal acharya status, ironically.
But that was a mistake that the society made, and you apologized for it in the back of the
garden, yeah,
years ago.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That was a massive mistake. You yeah. have to call it. I'm just really concerned this might be displeasing to Prabhupada.
Okay.
But if it is, it's on your head. I think you're a very, very brave man. That you're that convinced about it, I think you're very brave. And all the words you do. But I still, you know, I'm not totally convinced. I don't have time to talk to you after that.
Thank you, Brajahari Prabhu. And if nothing else, it's just a pleasure to see you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, again, thank you all. And if you do take a look at bbtedit.com if you have further interest in the subject. And again, thank you. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.